Now, Mike Pence had a quick rise in conservative politics from the U.S. House to the Indiana governor's office to vice president. And the possibility of a presidential run is still out there. But 4 years of Pence's loyalty to his running mate ended earlier this month with Trump supporters chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," while storming the Capitol. Our guest says that Pence's years of extreme loyalty to the president were motivated largely by Pence's drive to become president himself one day, and the last weeks of Trump's presidency led to serious fracturing within the Republican Party, an event that can be understood in part by looking at Pence's tenure as vice president. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see a Pence campaign for president in 2024? What do you think about his time as vice president and his handling of the coronavirus? Call 800-642-1234. Tom Lobianco is a Washington correspondent for Business Insider. He's the author of Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. Lobianco has covered Mike Pence for a decade for the Indy Star and other publications. Tom, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be here.
Well, I want to start at the end in some ways. On January 6th, the Trump supporters are going into the Capitol after the president targeted Vice President Pence for not trying to overturn the election results. He doesn't call the vice president. He tweets another attack on him while this is going on. What's going through your head as somebody who's been following Mike Pence for so many years?
It was, I mean, to me, it was absolutely astounding. You know, in the run up to that, Trump himself had been pushing Pence pretty hard behind the scenes to try and overturn the election results. Basically, you know, attempt a coup. And constitutionally, Pence could not do that. That's not his role. That's not the way the Senate rules were, and not the way the Constitution has determined this. So it was impossible. And, you know, what happened inside there was Pence actually like drafts this letter. And I'll be honest, like, you know, watching him through the administration and then reading that letter that he drafted on January 6th, where he wrote very definitively that no single person can unilaterally overturn the results of the election or decide who gets to become president. That was the most like actual Mike Pence, like the person who's buried inside there underneath the politics, the ambition, the calculation, all that, the positioning, the tacking, you name it. That's like the most of like the core of that guy, the one that I found while I was writing the book and while I was covering him, that I've seen, at least during his time with Trump. And he's, you know, he's very opaque. He's always been very opaque, but it shone through. And it kind of had me wondering, well, God, you know, where was that guy for the last 4 years? And then immediately after that, they stormed the Capitol. I mean, they're running in there to try and kill him, or at least that's what they said they were trying to do. It continues to astound me. I mean, I think around here, I'm in the suburb of Washington, D.C., and I know at least around here, we're still kind of shaken up by everything. So I don't know, man, you know, still a lot of things up in the air right now, frankly. I mean, we haven't even done the impeachment trial yet. I mean, among many other things.
Yeah, well, I want to go back to an earlier stage here. You wrote that in your book that Mike Pence had his eyes on the White House, not as vice president, but as president. He signs on with his Trump campaign, really thinking he's signing on for 4 months or so of association with Donald Trump. Not thinking he's going to win, but thinking he's going to set him up for 2020 to run against the incumbent Hillary Clinton. Talk about that gamble and how it didn't go the way he thought it would.
That's right. Yeah, you know, in July of 2016, you know, detail it very micro detailed in the book, how it actually happened, how he gets selected. And there's a lot of, you know, maneuvering that he and his own people do to make this happen, which is something that you don't often see, at least in public, by Pence. He's got, you know, he's got his own ambitions, but he's also got his own tactics and strategies for achieving these things. And he's been very good at hiding them. So, you know, flash forward. So he ultimately gets the nod. And then flash forward to October 7th, 2016, when the Washington Post publishes the Access Hollywood tape, where, you know, Trump, then the candidate, you know, brags about being able to molest women as long as he has a Tic Tac. And then you have, 30 minutes later, they dump the John Podesta emails, WikiLeaks, Assange. And in that moment, the donors of the Republican Party had been going to then-chairman Reince Priebus and his staff, asking him, saying, you know, we need to get Trump off the ticket. Can we replace him with Mike Pence? And those donors make the call to Pence and to one of his aides and say, hey, we're ready to replace. We've got this contingency plan, and we're ready to replace. We can call an emergency meeting of the RNC. We can replace Trump as the nominee with Mike Pence, and he would be the nominee, and that, you know, it will save us. And his guy says, no way. I'm not even going to bring this to Mike. Like, he's never going to find out about this. There's no way we're doing that. And you also saw in a different way, in a different event, Mitch McConnell basically say the same thing, that he wouldn't sign on to efforts to try and remove Trump as the nominee. And, you know, why was that? And as best I can tell, based on my reporting and, you know, kind of seeing things settle a little bit over the last few years and, you know, kind of see where the pieces fit together a little bit better, it's because everyone thought Trump was going to lose, and they were all planning out their own political future. You know, I talked with a couple of people who knew about Pence's fundraiser going out to donors, Republican donors, and telling them in October of 2016, sign on board with us now, and you'll have a seat at the table early, because we're going to be the front runner for the nomination in 2020, which immediately presumes a Trump loss. And that's how they thought about things, you know. So on election night 2016, when Hillary Clinton's 1:30 a.m., give or take, on November 9th, and Hillary Clinton calls to concede, and Mike Pence turns to his wife, Karen Pence, and says, we won. And Karen refuses, and he goes in for a kiss, and Karen refuses to kiss him. And she says, you got what you wanted, Mike. Now leave me alone. And, you know, the first time I'd heard that anecdote, I was a little skeptical of it, because they're a very careful political couple. They don't tend to let people see these things. They don't let themselves get exposed in public or in private, even really. But the more I thought about it, and the more I talked with folks about this as I reported it, the more it seemed like what she was really angry at was not Trump himself, but at Pence for taking this gamble. Because, you know, in a flash, they had gone from being stuck with serving with Trump for 4 months and then, you know, moving on to their own ambitions to having to survive 4 years. And I mean, as we all witnessed, it was a chaotic 4 years, to say the least. And Pence kept on getting roped into all of it. I mean, there's no way to duck that storm that was in there. And, you know, what did it result in? Ultimately, it results in people chanting outside the United States Capitol to hang the vice president. I mean, it's insanity. I hope we don't see anything more like that. Nobody should be putting death threats out there on people, you know, whether they're the vice president or the, you know, the Milwaukee dog catcher, who knows? Like, you just shouldn't be doing that. But I mean, in a sense, if you look at the sweep of it all, Karen Pence was right. You know, there's a lot of danger in that. You know, the risk and the reward seem to be unequal at this. You know, that does not seem to be properly balanced. And she's, you know, I'll say this, Karen Pence really, and from folks I talk with, has some pretty sharp political instincts. Some people think they're better than Mike Pence's.
We're talking to Tom LoBianco, author of the book Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House, looking at Mike Pence's time as vice president, the rocky ending, and what comes next. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about Mike Pence's time in the White House. Tom LoBianco is with us, author of Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. Let's talk about another chapter that happened after your book, Tom. COVID-19, Vice President, then Vice President Pence, put in charge of Trump administration efforts to stop the disease, sort of. But a lot of other people seem to be in charge of it, too. What did you make of that chapter in his White House term?
Yeah, you know, when they announced it almost a year ago now, at the end of last February, if you can remember back that far, nobody thought it would be as serious as this. I mean, everybody was all focused on Washington State, you know, a couple of cases out there. And, you know, I remember there was kind of a hot take inside of Washington that this would be the thing that, you know, Donald Trump would use to blame Pence for everything and then replace him on the ticket with a woman. And that would help Trump win re-election. I hate political speculation because it ends up so wrong all the time. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Chris Christie was the front runner for the Republican nomination in 2016, you know. I don't know. There's a couple things. There's a couple threads with Pence. And I think that when you think about him, this is what I was watching for when he got this. You know, he was not a very good executive when he was the governor of Indiana. He was highly indecisive. He didn't have a really good read on the legislature, how to interact with them. He didn't really have like a firm grip on things around there. Very apprehensive in his decision-making. And he spent a lot of time, you know, frankly, running for the next job. He was, you know, out courting donors throughout his time in office, taking a lot of flights to New York and whatnot. And I kind of looked at this and, you know, he'd been inside the Trump White House. He'd more or less been subsumed. I mean, he had a couple of things that he focused on. He had South American policy, which is hugely important if you're going to run for office, if you're going to run for any nomination, because that starts to get you into Florida. You know, reminder that the Latino community down there is, you know, as much as it's, you know, Cuban refugees, increasingly has been more Northern South America, the old Gran Colombia, Venezuela, parts of Peru. And he had that as a portfolio. He had Space Force. That was kind of a new branch of the military. You know, he got that. You know, all this stuff gets washed over by Trump, frankly. But, you know, when he gets this, it's a high profile assignment. And I was kind of watching, okay, would he take, how would he lead? Frankly, you know, if your question, like if this guy's ultimately running for president, your gauge of this is that it's a really good chance to get a look at him and to get a sense of, okay, how would he lead as president? And I think his handling of the coronavirus is actually a pretty good indicator of what he would be like as president if he decides to run in 24 and if he should get the nomination. You know, it was very hands off. He spent a lot of time messaging everything. You know, some people inside there argued that the task was too big for him. He wasn't built for it. He wasn't ready to step in on big fights. Other people and the folks close to him around there would say, well, no, Mike Pence has a very hands-off management style. And I guess that, you know, it depends on what you're looking for. Now, you know, the results of this is that, you know, we've had one of the worst times of this in across the globe. I mean, that's undoubted. And, you know, does that hang on him? Does it hang on Trump? Does it hang on, you know, the Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, Anthony Fauci? I don't know. But it's going to define him in the future. As, you know, as we look back on this, that's a defining moment for Mike Pence. And, you know, he led it the way that he governed Indiana, frankly, very hands off. I mean, he was part of everything, but he's not a strong executive, I'll put it that way.
Tom, in our last couple of minutes, I wanted to ask a little bit about his future as part of the future of the Republican Party. There's the question of, is it a Trump party now? Is it a post-Trump party? How much does Mike Pence's political future as a Republican hinge on that question?
Yeah, I mean, if you told me that, you know, Pence almost got exiled to like never Trump status with that, unfortunately for him. It's hard to tell. Things are so fluid right now. You know, some people will tell you that the Republican support for Trump is softening. Other people will tell you that it's still rock solid. When I talk with my sources around different campaigns around Washington, what I tend to hear the most from the Republicans is that it's just impossible to tell right now. You know, one thing that we do know is that Trump is not having the bullhorn of Twitter and Facebook to use. It's really kind of tamped things down quite a bit. And it's actually allowed people to really kind of catch their breath and try to figure out where they're going. Now, there's a couple tests I'm watching for right now. Number one is if somebody gets in a primary against Liz Cheney, the Wyoming Republican who voted to impeach Trump, does that, is there a strong challenger? Does it turn into like a Jeff Flake type of situation where, he spoke out against Trump and then immediately gets primary and, steps out before he could lose? I don't know. It's hard to tell right now. Things are very fluid on the Republican side, and frankly, in a way that they were not, like 1 p.m. on January 6th. I mean, at that point, Trump was still the de facto front runner for 2024 for the party. Hard to tell if that's the case anymore. I mean, January 6th just flipped everything on its head in so many different levels, not least of which was Republican Party politics. So just a lot to watch right now, and nothing settled.
Tom, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Tom LoBianco, Washington correspondent for Business Insider. He's the author of the book Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. He joined us for a look back at Mike Pence's term as vice president and the rocky ending with his running mate.